selling.
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Blowing North Face Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howell.
Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 150. NASDAQ futures down 50 cents after a new record high yesterday. We should have had the we're at an all-time high from the Bond film. Should have that song maybe for the second break there, Ricky, or something. I think it's Sheen Easton, but I'm not sure. We're on an all-time high. Again, yet another one this year. Just saying. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. So, you know, I have a something I'd like to ask you a question.
There you go. But we're on the south side now. We're going to ask each other.
We're going to ask each other, right? Well, you know, there are people on the south side that do that all the time.
Yep.
There was the chick. Although it wasn't on the south side, there was the chick who decided she would. Well, I guess it wasn't an axe. It was more like a steak knife. She steak knifed the cop.
Well, funny you should mention that, because my.
By the way, he shot her.
Able-bodied assistant, Lawrence, who he and I do all manage trading, but for some of the people, my brother does it for others, and obviously the three of us commiserate, but he was actually on a jury once where some guy whacked a dude with a hatchet.
Oh, well, that sounds like a nice guy.
Yeah, well, now you'll never guess what they were fighting over. What the hell's Ricky, help me here. What's the term for the, not singles, but something, where somebody would go into a store in the bad neighborhood, or in a poorer neighborhood, and buy a pack of cigarettes, and then sells ones or twosies to people going down the street, because they can't afford the whole pack.
I have no idea what that's called, honestly.
It's a... I'm not accusing you of living down there, Rick. I'm just saying. What's it? Is it not twosies or something? But you want to buy a pack, which is like $10, and you sell them for like $2 a smoke or something.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure there's a name for it, but I just don't know it in English.
Well, some guy. There you go. This guy had it. That was his corner. It was like at 47th in Indiana. You know where that is. And this other dude tried to break in, and the other guy went home, and he came back on a bike with a hatchet and whacked the guy in the face.
Well, you know, so I said, nice, it sounds like a nice guy.
So I said to Larry, what does the guy look like? He goes, he looks fine. They took him to a county hospital, evidently. Some plastic surgeon kind of, you know, put it together really well, and it was right on his beard line. He said, you'd never even notice it. I think I patched together fine. Onesies or twosies or something is the name.
Big shock, right? You don't have enough money to buy the whole pack, so, you know, and you're really jonesing hard for a smoke, so there you go.
Yeah, but it's a Lucy's, Kevin says. Lucy's.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So
Kevin must live in quite the hood.
Well, there you go. So here's the question I'd like to ask you.
Yep.
So, you know, yesterday we did not trade because it was the day that we should be celebrating the civilization of the land that we are on.
By the way, we did trade. Markets were open.
Well, yeah, we kind of did. Yeah, bonds were closed, though, weren't they?
Cash bonds. Futures were open.
Well, yeah, futures are always open. Futures are open on national holidays half the time, at least until noon, you know. But no, so, you know, we were supposed to be celebrating the day that this terrible thing that we're all supposed to hate ourselves,
right?
Because we're white men, right?
Or into this self-flagellation for sure.
Well, you know, this is what we're all told. That this is terrible, but the fact that we have markets, the fact that I'm actually sitting in a hotel right now, that we have buildings that are taller than two stories. That we have electric lights, we're able to have this conversation because there's an internet. Vint Cerf was a white man. That we have cars, Henry Ford, that made them accessible to everyday Joe. We have power, George Westinghouse. Okay, alternating current.
Yep.
Pullman. Hello.
Yeah.
Okay. Trains. And rail cars for humans was Pullman, but you know, I mean, yeah, okay, go down the list, all the way down the list. By the way, Mr. Crapper was the person who refined the water closet, okay, which I'm sure you appreciate, rather than having to up and go out in the outhouse in the middle of the night. So, all of this came to this land that we now sit on because of the most maligned individuals in modern American history, and that would be white men.
Well, you know, Columbus was Jewish.
Supposedly, but I don't care if he's Jewish. The fact is, he's a white man.
Well, it's an anti-Semitism to not like him.
Well, yeah, okay. I know that's the current controversy on whether or not he was actually faking his Christianity because he was trying to avoid religious persecution. All right, because Jews were persona non grata where he was from at the time.
Well, they got booted out of Spain in 1492.
Well, yeah, they got through.
Most went east, and he went west in a boat.
Well, you know, all right, but for being able to build tall ships that could cross oceans, but for being willing to risk dying, which many people who attempted to cross oceans in tall ships did.
Yeah,
none of this would be here.
Hey, it's getting a little windy out here. Well, that's a hurricane. Oh, really?
Oh, is that so? Yeah. Oops.
Oops, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is reality. And then, of course, white man has been the progenitor of many terrible things, too. I mean, Adolf Hitler was white. He certainly wasn't a nice guy. You know, funny,
Stalin was white. We got all kinds of bad people.
Oh, Austrian painter with a funny mustache.
Who's the guy from Belgium? What the hell is his name? Nick the Assassin? What was that guy's name? Something terrible that he killed how many zillion people to? What the hell is his name?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, it's... of course, then you have Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, yeah, we got all kinds of people.
Yeah, we got all kinds of... You know, we have a wide diversity of both good and bad. But one of the things that I found interesting is that, you know, in the current political climate, it is, of course... inappropriate, and we'll get people call you all sorts of things. I'm sure I'll get plenty of hate mail for this little screed this morning. But the amusing part of it to me is that just in the last couple of days, we've had a couple of things out of people that I think are both intentional and a little ominous from a standpoint of the markets and the political sphere in the U.S. Let's start with the first one, and that's the simplest one, which was Neil Kashkari. Did you hear what he said?
He said something about was he the guy who said we better be careful on the drop in the rates or something?
No, what he said is that as long as federal debt continues to increase, the neutral rate will increase.
Well, sure it will.
Well, I understand this, but boy, oh boy, that sounds like a fart in a church, right?
I was going to ask you.
So here's the thing, though. What he's basically saying is that given that Congress has no propensity to do anything about this because we have a magical money machine that we can just push a button and issue more bonds and there will never be a consequence for doing this, and as a result, we can spend all kinds of money that we don't have. By the way... I know that you have some balance to it, but you're quite a proponent of renewable energy. You do know.
What I said is if we use our head and use it in the places that
where it makes sense.
It already makes sense as time goes by. It will get better and better.
I said there was balance to it. Yep. Okay. I didn't say you were a zealot. I said you had balance to it. England supposedly has balance to it, too. But yesterday, they proved the point that I've been making for the last, ever since the climate screamers started this stuff. They had to turn on their backup capacity to the tune of 58% of their total electrical production because the sun wasn't shining and the wind wasn't blowing.
I hate it when that happens.
Well, and guess what? They had to pay to build and maintain that plant, even though it was producing nothing, for those times when the sun was shining and the wind was blowing. Okay. Therefore, assuming that they all cost about the same amount of money per delivered watt to put up, you just got a 60% increase in the cost of your electrical power.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm not, I,
Well, that's kind of stupid when you could just use the other form in the first place. I mean, if you want to deliberately screw yourself out of 60% of all of the money you have in your wallet, that's pretty dumb, okay? And yet, and oh, by the way, since energy is in absolutely everything the economy produces, I don't care what it is. I mean, as simple as the hotel room I'm sitting in right now, there's no electric lights with, you know, without electricity. Oh, boy, guess what? That price of the power goes into the price of the hotel room.
Sure it does.
You know, along with everything else, right? I can see a Walmart
what do you
out
there. What's the electric bill is for one of these big casinos in Vegas?
Oh, my God.
Last time I was out there, it had to be 20 years ago, it was $300,000 a month. It's got to be six or seven now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I can see a Walmart sign out my, you know, hotel window. It obviously lit up, right? Because it's still dark here.
Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, behind the price of absolutely everything is energy. So, yes, I mean, if you would really like to put, you know, 50% on your cost of living, we don't have an inflation problem to begin with. We just want to make it worse. Then, you know, this would be a good thing. So that was the first. The last one, which I think was really interesting, was what Clinton did yesterday. He nuked Harris. And he did.
I've not heard from him forever.
Well, I'm not a fan of Bill Clinton by any stretch of the imagination, and I dealt with his administration, including Ira Magaziner, as it was his technologies are, when I was running my internet company. And as far as I'm concerned, the entire thing was a snake pit. But and Ira and I had a very interesting conversation at one point, too. Sometime I'll have to recall, maybe on the show, when we start talking about technology and people breaking into things and the games that our government plays. But he nuked Harris. He pointed out that Lake and Riley would be alive today but for Biden and Harris's administration's actions on immigrants, specifically that they weren't vetting anybody coming in.
Well, I tell you what, from the this is one of those things, this immigration, which I'm with you guys that the problem needs to be solved and all that stuff, but it being a hot button issue when all this other stuff was here long before they were here, it's 2% of the problem and it's 90% of the talk.
Well, except that again, the inflationary pressure that gets put on the economy,
it's minuscule. We would have.
Oh, really? We're 3 million housing units short, according to the so-called analysts. But we've let 10 million people into the country.
Well,
in the last three and a half years,
anybody who has the idea that all the stuff you and I have been talking about, and you're the one who led me down this path, so I got to get you back on the path. This is a 20 to 25 year phenomenon.
This is a serious problem
the last year or two. But anybody thinks that the guys I see here in Chicago are the reason Chicago is broke? Come on, we're not even those guys aren't getting the. They're not getting 0.5% of the budget now. Not even that.
Well, okay. And you know what? When I'm broke, if I continue to go to the casino and drop $100 a day on
nothing,
that
I you right. know I we could if we manage to grab the taxes earned by one of these multinational companies that they're hiding overseas, it pays for the entire immigration problem. I mean, you know, wherever you want to look, there's screw ups in our government. I mean. It just depends on where you're going.
And the thing is, I mean, the other thing that I have pointed out all the time, and this is this one always gets people very, very, very upset, is that when you look at the, for example, the so-called climate crisis, right, the amount of emissions under both Republican and Democrat administrations is essentially a straight line that has no inflection points based upon what party is in control of either Congress or the White House.
You're the one who taught me that. I use your name a lot by saying, Carl has got me looking at the 20. I was doing a softball game last week. The guy says, I said, I got this guy on my show named Carl Denninger. And I always thought I was pretty bright, but he got me on a 25-year look at things.
Right.
The world is a hell of a lot different when you look that way. And this guy I was talking to, he has a patent on some metal system. He's a real smart guy. He goes, wait a minute, man. He started talking about the pipeline. I said, look at your oil production. Get
right.
The table out, look at it. The only president that oil production was down during his term was Bush.
Yeah.
Which you would never even guess. And I don't know what the story was there. But, you know, I think about this immigrant stuff is there's going to be, you know, here's how crazy I get with the numbers. Way back in the day, we got a Time magazine thing, and they talked about all the bad stuff that happened to the Kennedy family. And I'm not talking about people being assassinated. You know, this kid having cancer and this him some. There was a fold-out in the middle of the Time magazine thing. The family is enormous. there's hundreds of people there. So for one, you know, you don't want to be the kid or whatever. For one child to have cancer or two is probably within the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, this immigrant thing, I'm looking here, I'm going to say Chicago has a bunch of people here that, okay, came in and say illegally, I can't tell if it's legal, and I know we're a bunch are in my neighborhood, and I have not seen, I drive by there twice a day, I see half of them now heading for the bus, they have some kind of a job, so there's some progress. I'm not saying everybody's a saint. I don't go by there and smell marijuana like I do everywhere else in town. I don't go by there and see guys, you know, popping, having half pints in their back pocket like other places in town. I'm not saying they're all saints. I'm looking here. Chicago has 435 shot and killed this year. 2518 total shot. I'm going to say less than 10 are immigrants.
By the way, do you know who's the vast overrepresentation based upon their population percentage?
Oh, black people.
Of course.
Yeah.
And by the way, they're the ones who are dying too.
Yeah, and that's okay. That's the part I can't get. That's the part I absolutely cannot get. Why it seems to be okay for anybody to really go after this? You're the bad white guy. Why can't I have sympathy for black people to get shot? I do. I grew up in a black neighborhood. I don't want anybody shot. I don't care what color you are. Why if I say you got to go after these people that are shooting people, it makes me a bad guy. I actually think that the person, other people get, you have a right to not get shot.
Well, it would seem to me that if you care about black people, you'd be really pissed off about
yeah.
the black kids that get shot. Okay? But, you know, I mean, but bringing that up makes you a racist.
Without a doubt.
And it's like, excuse me, the color of the assailant and the color of the dead person are the same.
Right.
So if we're going to address now maybe you don't care about that, but I happen to think it's bad no matter who it is that's getting shot.
I go through one of those neighborhoods and all I think about is the people here that are trying to live peaceably and can't.
Right. That's right. And you know, but I look at what's going on right
now. By the
way,
now. Look at what you got me doing here. No suspect charged. 19% of the murders have somebody arrested.
Yeah.
3%.
Oh, yeah, the clearance rate. You have an 80% chance of getting away with it in Chicago.
Yep. It's down to 78.
Oh boy, they've added 2% to the clearance rate.
By the way, we have 96 this year. Guess how many in the shot in the ass meter?
Oh, God.
No. We have 36 people that shot themselves.
How many in the junk?
I'm looking for that one. The shot in the junk.
That's on there, yeah.
I know. It's I'm not seeing it today. You know, it's 413 males, 57 females. Anyway, it's a horrible situation. Can I shift over to a real estate question for you?
Yeah. By the way, we just had two very fine people do the same thing in Nashville because, you know, there was a. It was a football game, and they decided the historically black college had a football game, and they decided that this would be a good time to go out and start shooting people.
Yeah, well,
they just caught the two guys that did it.
Yeah, I've this weekend. But
one of them, by the way, Chief, was out on bond for felony assault with a weapon.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. How nice.
Actually, my attorney buddies here claim that the instead of, you know, the ban thing, I mean, first of all, there's more people in jail because of that. Not the other way around, but they have a real lot of people on this home confinement. You know, yeah. Because, you know, that's actually working really well. If those guys wander off, they're on them pretty quick.
By the way, 31 shot in the junk.
There you go.
I just found it.
Oh, you know, I don't know if you're close to Chicago news, but guess what was vandalized yesterday? Was a Lincoln statue.
That makes so much sense, right? I mean, you know, the guy who issued the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah. Well, you know, but think, I think what people sort of need to do, and this is, everybody's down there and they're doing their hate thing on their phone at night, but you need to get yourself some sort of a sense of 3 or 4 books. Now, I know there was a guy in the OEX pit. One of the guys, Bob Bage, used to trade for me, really nice kid. He traded down by the Schwab brokers, and there was this guy down there who was a kind of this, he was a pump you up kind of guy, you know, Mr. Bodybuilder. So somebody buys him a book for Christmas. And so everybody's in the pit on, you know, the day after Christmas. Hey, what'd you get for Christmas? The guy goes, hey, somebody bought me a book. Now what am I gonna do with a bleeping book? So his buddy Bob goes, I think we all know. Anyway, but any kind of even a cursory reading of the 19th century, for God's sake, it's almost like the Dark Ages, in the sense of how people retreated and all the bad stuff that happened.
Yeah,
I mean it's go from slavery. I'll put that as number one, but on a day-to-day basis, I'd say having rotten days day after day. Blowing tunnels in the if you're Asian, in the Sierra Nevadas with black powder, nobody caring if what you were breathing or whether an avalanche swept you off wasn't a good time.
Right.
And a coal mine, before anybody even wore a mask, I can't believe that was a pretty good time. Sharecropper. I mean, was there anything? I mean, you know, you talk about slavery in the Civil War, but how many people from Illinois and Indiana and Ohio that never even saw a slave, never made a dime from a slave? Lost arms, legs, and bodies, and whole bodies, and were in Civil War camps with the measles that come by and mouth. And it was a horrible time to be alive for just about anybody. Even if you were rich, you had 2-3 people in your family died from some disease. You go take
well,
a pill
twice,
for now.
Twice as many people in the Civil War died from disease and pestilences from being shot.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. That's why Lincoln liked Grant better, because he'd rather people die in a battlefield than in the mess tent,
right? This is where our technological improvement and we all know how, you know, where this mostly came from has actually made a huge difference. And in fact, the biggest one when it comes to war fighting is antibiotics, because any wound to the gut prior to that was almost invariably fatal.
What were sulfa drugs used for? They were before penicillin, right?
They're in the same basic sort of class. So, I mean, it's the same idea.
Well, didn't if you got a wound in World War II, didn't you pop your sulfa drug capsule and drop the powder on the wound or something? You see that?
Well, sulfa drugs were the first class of antibiotics. They started being used in the 1930s.
Okay.
So, and the way they work is by binding to folate. They prevent the synthesis of folate, which is necessary for a bacteria to grow. So that's the, you know, but yeah, they're effective against a wide range of bacteria, and were, you know, prior to the other, you know, prior to penicillin being developed.
I never heard of penicillin being applied topically, but sulfa was, right?
Sulfa was, and one of the problems, though, over time, is that, as with all antibiotics, complete organisms adapt to their environment, and so bacteria developed resistance. And there is this trope that it is, you know, it is because people use them inappropriately, and if we didn't do that, they wouldn't be resistant. That's complete BS. The reality is that every time that you use a antibiotic, you are praying that one of those bacterium does not survive, because if it does, it is probably now resistant to that particular class of drug.
I think when I was in college, some kid came back from break with meningitis.
Yeah.
And I think they gave us all sulfa drugs.
Well, there was so some meningitis infections are bacterial and some are viral. The viral ones are a biatch.
Yeah, this was a bacterial one. I know, even at that age, it made me sleep like 5 hours. I got home, I went to my regular doctor. He goes, get off those things. They're going to make you sleep. You don't have it. I go, okay. I think we're going to have Kenny on today, but hopefully you'll hang anyway. What do you think about I have a question. We're going to go over here for a second, but let's make this brief. But one of the headlines is that Walgreens is going to close like 1,200 stores. My question is, and maybe those leases are all up, but Walgreens used to be in like all the malls and everything. And, matter of fact, there was a guy at the Board of Trade, so a lot of people in the Board of Trade building. Walgreens had a 10-year plan of having standalone places, and they offered 20 and 40-year leases for people to build the places to their specs and all that stuff. What happens to all those leases? Those guys just bleep out of luck?
I mean, I'm willing to bet that a lot of that just kind of, you know, they just say, well, F you, and, you know, go ahead and try to sue us. We don't have any money. I mean, I got my space in 2 Prudential because the former tenant just walked out on the lease.
But, I mean, there has to be 20 on the south side that I can name. They were in a shopping center and said no, and they bought, like, the White Castle across the street. They wanted the drive-through. They wanted all that stuff. But people, there was a guy here, I'll bet he financed 50 of them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, matter of fact, he was trying to get me to talking to one in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I said,
Well, there was one. There was a Walgreens right across the street from Prudential Plaza.
Really?
It was in the ground floor of the, you know, it was the retail space that was right.
Yeah, but I'm saying they wanted the best they could be around the rest of the city and country. They wanted to have their own spot.
Yeah, well, when they could. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. And I mean, they're, but I don't know. It's the market is changing, and part of it is that there's been so much, you know, so much BS has gone on with what amounts to monopolist practices, and people, you know, what usually happens when you do this, if you can't get the government to prevent somebody from doing it, is they decide to take a good shot.
Well, Illinois, we got a dash here, Crumb, but in Illinois, it all was the state wasn't paying people. I mean, right. Walgreens and some people were able to float it, and independent people couldn't. But then once that sort of ended, there's more competition. Anyway, SP Futures are flat. Landsdale Futures down 12. Quick break. We'll be right back with Joel and Cannon.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al, Ricky on the board. S&P futures are up 25 cents. NASDAQ futures are down 11.75. At Goldman Sachs earnings came out. They beat on the top and bottom line. They're up $16. Everything's up 3%. You just got whatever it is, you're higher. United Health, however, is not. They had earnings, I believe, as well. They're down 3%. They're down $20. 585.04 is where they are trading. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 35.2%, FTSE down 44.5%. Yeah, Grand down pretty big here, down 66, that's 0.9%. Oil and gas stocks are down here, which is, we're a little long in there, so that's not the best, but Asia, Nikkei, they are up, they traded today up, they're up 304.8%, Hang Seng down 774, that's almost 4%, and Shanghai down 83, 2.5%. Are these trade data disappointed here? Hang Seng, like I say, tanking 4%. CSI falls over 2%. These guys are up, down, and all around. Government says they're going to help out. They fly up. Then some bad number comes out. They fly down. I can't even imagine what it's like trading over there. Yesterday, big day to the upside. Dow up 201. S&P up 44. NASDAQ down 159. Every little dip was turned out to be a buying opportunity yesterday. Buy the dip. 10-year rate unchanged, 407. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.24. Japan up 2.97, pushing toward 1%. Oil down 327, back to 70.56. Brent down 320, 74.26. NASDAQ, natural gas down 3 cents, 245. RBOB down 7 cents, 202. Gold up 340, 3667, 3669, which is poised here to go to 2700. We'll see if it will. Silver up 2 cents, 31.34. Copper down 6 cents, 434. We have crypto, U.S. dollar, 109 on the euro, so down, it's euro's down, the dollar's been strong the last couple of weeks. Same thing with the British pound, 130.8. Crypto, down 327 after a huge rally yesterday, 65,592. We have, of course, traffic, weather, sports. Is it ever going to get light today? It looks like it's still dark. It's almost 6:45, for God's sake.
It looks like it's going to be cloudy all day. Maybe I'll get to that right now. Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 42 degrees right now with a high of 50. Mostly all day, Chief, is going to be cloudy, windy, and cooler with periods of rain all day. Tonight's going to be partly cloudy, breezy, and chilly with a low of 41 degrees. So probably we're not going to see any sun today. Phoenix is a different story, though. We got 77 degrees right now with a high of 96. Hot with plenty of sunshine. And tonight will be clear with a low of 69 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's. We're looking at 28 minutes. 55 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 35 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 24 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. 31 minutes. Lastly, sports. In the NBA yesterday, the Bulls lost to the Bucks, 107 to 111. And today, the latest champion, the Boston Celtics, are playing the Raptors at 6 p.m. The MLB yesterday, the Mets beat the Dodgers 7-3, and the Yankees beat the Guardians 5-2. Guardians and Yankees are facing off again today at 6:38 p.m. Thursday, October 17, for the NFL, the Broncos play the Saints at 7:15 p.m. There's no Bears game this week, but you can catch the Cardinals and the Chargers facing off Monday, October 21st at 8 p.m. Lastly, hockey season is back, of course, and today we got the Blackhawks playing the Flames at 8 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
I don't get the Blackhawks with their new station, and I don't get the NFL, so...
Oh, no.
Nothing for me, I guess. Do we have Joel?
Yeah, good morning,
How
Chief.
Are you, bud? What's going on? What do you want... Talk markets, talk sports. What do you want to do?
Well, I guess we could talk sports off the bat. My Tigers put up a good fight, but when you don't have one guy hitting near 300, there's only so much you can expect. But maybe they can pick up some bats in the off season. Did get to see two great games, two great crowds, 45,000 plus at Comerica Park. So that's positive. Lions on a positive, kicked the Cowboys butt, but not at the expense of losing all-star defensive end Aiden Hutchinson. Just a brutal injury there. And
it turned out allegedly, the even though it looked awful, I think it was a couple of clean breaks. He's already fixed up, and they claim he should have no issues going forward.
Yeah, I hope that's the truth. And and then also, little rivalry game going, I guess, between Illinois and Michigan. Michigan traveling down to Champaign-Urbana, and they are going to – Michigan's a slight favorite. I little hard to believe that, but a must-win for Michigan, and I know the Fighting Illini, tough place to play. So that wraps it up on sports. The market, we're getting some darn good bank earnings here. Goldman Sachs trading up $19. We all know what J.P. Morgan did. Bank of America, very good earnings. So there. I mean, so far, earnings coming in good for the big banks.
Out of all the stuff that I think I've learned in the business in my many years here, Joel, I still cannot get myself a handle around these bank earnings and whether they're buys or not buys, because their noses are so far up the ass of government, I can't tell whether they're doing good or they're just allowed to say they're doing good so they can buy stock back. Or I can never figure them out. Is it just me, or has everybody else got it figured out but me?
I mean, I do own some banks. Dividend paying, have got some capital appreciation. Everything's fine in the banking industry until it's not. And, we saw that a year ago in April. So not sure what, ties of the government spending. They put the government involvement. They put out the numbers, and you have to trade them at face value. But that's Goldman Sachs there making a new all-time high by a wide margin.
Well, my opinion of Goldman Sachs, but that's, from being on the trading floor and everything, the idea that they're all bigger than they're supposed to be, but they don't make them get smaller. But the idea of fixing the bank industry is having to make so much money that they got so much money they couldn't possibly screw up. Not so sure that's my formula, but that's what it is. I mean, it's hard for me to get a handle on whether any given month they're doing good or bad. What's that ratio that everybody uses? Book to something. Something to book, loan to book, or
book value.
Yeah, there's a book to something that they use. I was never able to get a big handle on. But it's hard for me to. I mean, I think J.P. Morgan is always doing fine. It's just a question of how fine. How could they ever not?
And you're talking about price to book value of banks. Yeah, that's what you're talking about. Chief, I mean, I just don't have an opinion on these. I mean, they're big. There's several of them. They're not breaking them up. You could take the stance of Warren Buffett here, who's been peeling out of the Bank of America. Interest rates, I thought banks were supposed to go up when interest rates go up. They did, and they seem to, the street seems to be benefiting from lower rates. Now, one thing that they do have going for them is their valuations, whether you believe them or not, and this market is, as of late, I mean, besides the tech, has been shifting into the value trade, and a lot of these banks trade at reasonable valuations. So it all depends where you want diversification in your portfolio. I mean, they're not as sexy as some of the tech stocks, but they have the price appreciation and the dividend.
I have a question, and this is, dodge it or not dodge it. The idea that, because I'm starting to get more and more into this, the same phenomenon is hitting the big six stocks here as in 2000, to the extent where So many people now, including my clients, we're putting money into these ETFs, the Qs, and we end up. If the normal person that puts money in his 401k every week, and he's in a, whether it be it's a Vanguard fund or whatever it is, or if it's the ETFs themselves, do you think everybody even knows or 50% of it's going into six stocks? And a lot of people, I know I have people saying, I don't want to be in any of those stocks. Put me in the Qs. And I do. It's better than being in one of them, because we'd probably pick the wrong one, or somebody might pick the wrong one. But still, I mean, just the phenomenon of the indexing and the passive investing, is it driving stocks to prices that they wouldn't be otherwise? I mean, I think it happened during the 2000. I mean, after that thing broke, I mean, Cisco was one of the stocks that was 45-50% of the. So was Oracle, and I had all kinds of people. Well, I had PTI, I had. They had those stocks, and thank God we had puts on some of them, because they went down like 80%. And once they did, you looked at them and go, how the hell were these things ever that high? And it's because, I think, because everybody was buying the Qs, and they were the Qs. I don't know how you stopped it, or if you wanted to. I love it, ETFs. It just seems like it's when it comes like this, long periods of time of straight up, you wonder if they're going up because people even knows what the hell they're buying.
I think it's something that we talk a lot about. Our show is the ETF effect, and you'd be surprised at some of the stocks that are in the queues, and overvaluing the stocks that are in there, the big tech stocks on their earnings. A lot of stocks, because they're in ETFs, get punished on days when the market's way up. If you look at, even in the queues, something like Comcast, you think of that being in the queues, what? And then you see, a big move in the top components. So it overdoes stocks on the upside, and it overdoes stocks on the downside as well.
Well, that's kind of what I'm worried about. right now, they're just a relentless investment fever. And it's because it's been that way for a long time, Joel. I think the federal government is right, or the Federal Reserve is back into inflation mode. They're back up to 6-7%.
It could be. No one seems to need, besides me and you, or at least it's not going. It's not going down as fast as people think, or it's not stabilizing. I think the Fed is in a tough position here. With their next meeting being after the November election. I think that's something that's big. I would say, just an overall market thought here, and, you never like to stand in front of a speeding train or the momentum. But I just will say, if you look at, and I'm not a huge volume guy, but the last few days, you look at the volume, we're going up and we're making new all-time highs by a wide margin, but it's just not the kind of volume. In fact, the Spider, for example, had a volume of 36 million shares. It had a volume day around that on September 16th. But that you need to go back all the way until August 27th to find a lower volume day. So on the big up days, it's great to see. But right now, if you're banking on volume and volume confirmation, it's not there, at least over the last couple of days. Now, we do have an options expiration on Friday. We do have something going on in November that's going to turn some heads. But just a only word of caution out there to your traders and investors here that volume over the last couple of days is not what you want to see when a market making new all-time highs. And also, I'm sure you know all about this. I mean, you still have, with the market at all-time highs, you still have an elevated VIX, which is supposed to be a sign of caution. But a lot of different factors for that, but I just wanted to point that out.
Well, thank you. Yesterday being a Columbus Day, is that normally a slow day? Is that a fair day to pick?
That's true. I will give you that. But Friday's volume was a little bit lower too. And then a couple days last week, you had sub 40 million in the SPY. So good point there, Chief. We'll see what happens. But as always, keep if you're looking at your stocks or your indexes or whatever, don't worry about the all-time highs. Just worry about the all-time closing highs and use that as your mark. So that's it for today.
Take care, bud.
Thanks for having me. Go Blue.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, thank you. I apologize about last week. I don't know what happened to me. I slept right through it. But I guess I just needed some rest.
Well, that or you left the bar at closing time.
No, I didn't do that, but I think I was just completely wiped out. I was so embarrassed when I woke up at 8 o'clock. I went, oh, man.
I was going to ask you, did you dodge the hurricane totally?
We dodged it totally. I can tell you something, it was really interesting. We dodged the hurricane, and we dodged those tornadoes, which were really wicked. Although the tornadoes, they rose up all around us. But they didn't hit where we were in North Palm Beach. They hit down in Lake Worth. They hit in Wellington, which is out west of me. They hit north of me in Port St. Lucie and for up that way north. But the one that came up through Lake Worth into Palm Beach Gardens was probably about 2 miles to my west.
Wow!
That we were very lucky. So we had down branches and that kind of thing, but nothing at all in terms of damage.
That those tornadoes were hitting even long before the hurricane. It was like the leading edge of the downside, right?
Tornadoes were spawned by the hurricane, but they just popped up out of nowhere. There were, I think, 12 or 15 of them that all popped up on the East Coast, right? Because the tornado was coming in on the West Coast. I mean, the hurricane was coming in on the West Coast, but the tornadoes were spawned on the East Coast, which was really interesting. And I got to tell you something, you know, I've never been in a tornado. I don't live in the, you know, in the center of our country where they have a lot of them. So it was a very, very odd type of experience to see that they were happening all around me, kind of just waiting to see what happened next, you know?
We were very close in the 1967 Palm Sunday tornadoes. It went through Oak Lawn and Evergreen Park here.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, we sold that house and moved to a new house that was right where it was. Figured, I don't know, what my dad figured where could it happen. But the thing bounced along. And here, the thing that I kind of will never forget, it must have been like a mile from us, right? And you just felt this weird... We had this old mutt dog, right? Well, at the time, he wasn't old, but the storms never bothered him at all. And all of a sudden, this thing went by. And humans, I mean, I felt something weird. He just went. The barometric pressure must have been so low. It scared the bejesus out of this poor guy. And he lived another 10 years, and every time it drizzled, he was a shaking mess on the sofa.
Yeah, no idea.
After that, it went by one time. But it tore the roof off Beverly Country Club, and it killed buried Oak Lawn High School, the whole gym section. Just went up and down, picking spots, nailing a spot, going back up in the air. And finally, when it got to Beverly Country Club, which is probably, if not the highest point, one of the highest points in the Chicago area, and then it goes, you know, down from there towards the lake, it never touched anything else all the way to the lake. It just was gone.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of amazing to me how they... touchdown, they do some damage, and then suddenly they just disappear, like it just suddenly stops. But the damage it does create is really amazing when you look at some of the pictures of the complete destruction of a lot of these homes, you know, that it hits along the way.
Well, it creates a total vacuum. It sucks so bad that the vacuum is what causes the problem when it goes by. Right. It just sucks everything into it. But plus it throws stuff around. You get killed by projectiles.
Yeah, 100%. So that's why I say, you know, we were sitting here and they were, you know, I was in my office at first when my wife was home, and she called me and said, don't go anywhere because there are tornadoes coming up through Palm Beach Gardens. And I went, there can't be a tornado in Palm Beach Gardens. And then I turned on the news. I was like, oh, shit.
Well, Ken, what do you make of the market here? I'm absolutely flabbergasted that the Fed is going right back to before COVID, pumping money into the system. We go up every day. Do they think they can get another 10 years out of this? Maybe they can, but boy.
I think they're pumping money for two reasons. I think, number one, they don't want to see a market collapse right ahead of the election. I also think they're supporting, I do think they're supporting the current administration and then what could be a continuation of the current administration. I think that's where all that's coming from, right? Because we don't have that October historical seasonal performance where the market's weak. In fact, October's been a tremendously strong month, right? Which is counter to everything that history suggested that it should be. And I think a lot of that is because the Fed made those interest rate cuts in September. They hinted at more major cuts coming in November, although they pulled back on that a little bit. But I do think they're continuing to support the market going into the election. What happens after the election, maybe, you know, once it's settled, then I think they'll say, okay, now it's settled, so let it do what it wants. Let the market do what it wants. But, yes, I continue to scratch my head as we make new highs. It's like the algorithms only know how to buy stocks. They don't know how to sell them. But you know how quickly that can change, because when the algos decide to sell, suddenly it's a disaster.
Well, the experimentation that's going on with this Chinese market, where the government is trying their best to create wealth, because it seems like that's all these politicians think now. They can create wealth by just throwing money at it.
Because it keeps the masses happy, right? Keeps the mass. Anyone that owns stocks is, you know, couldn't be happier.
Well, but
right?
It gets that part of the masses happy. The other part that they can't afford anything, they're not so happy. They don't have a voice.
Well, okay, I hear you. And listen, if they don't stop, especially in this country, you know, now it's getting to the point of where it's ridiculous, where both sides are promising all kinds of benefits and they're going to spend all kinds of money. I want to know where they're going to get all this money.
Well, Kenny, we got a couple seconds. Here's my read on that. Both sides, I think they're pretty insulated, these people, from regular people.
Yeah.
But something must be getting through to them. They must know, even though I question both of whether they, whatever, why they're both running and we're voting for one of them. Anyway, that's another whole story. But I mean, Kamala Harris has to realize, and she does. She realizes that somehow or another, regular people can't afford the stuff they used to be able to afford.
Correct.
And her response to that is, okay, we're gonna give everybody $25,000 for the home that 5 years ago they could afford, and now they can't. It's a response, some sort of a response to a problem that they created. And I'm going to say this problem was created entirely by the Trump-Biden administrations. So the idea of the two of them running, the two worst presidencies I've ever seen, running, yeah, saying that the other one was worse than theirs, is almost like a Three Stooges comedy act to me. I mean,
is it Three Stooges comedy?
I mean the idea that Trump is running around blaming Biden for inflation when under his watch money supply went up 40% in 18 months. He's either, and this is the question I'll ask, if there was a big guy upstairs someday, I'll ask him, which is worse, that he doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's lying, or her the same way. Now, yeah. His story is every place he goes, if he's sitting there in front of a bunch of ditch diggers, he's going to say, "I love you, ditch diggers. By the way, you're not going to have to pay taxes on overtime." He's changing the tax law to everybody he's talking to, saying,
"Yeah."
So neither one of those has got a snowball's chance in hell of getting anywhere. But it makes people feel good when they're there. So I mean, this is what we're down to for 30 more days.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems crazy to me. I agree with you.
But regarding the Fed, I think they always don't want the stuff going on crazy before the election. Although they couldn't stop it in 2008. It all happened right before, right after. But here's my question: on a personal level, if you were Powell, and I'm not asking your politics or anything like that, if you were Powell, would you want any part of Trump on a personal level?
I wouldn't want any part of either side. To answer your question, no, I wouldn't want any part of Trump, right? Trump just happens to be the person at the top of the ticket right now, which, again, we could talk about that, too, on how that ended up being. But that's not this conversation. But no, I wouldn't. But Trump has made it very clear that if he gets in, he's going to get rid of Powell. So nothing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Duh. Right?
So he's going to do everything he can to kind of work against him. So supporting the market, cutting rates with a jumbo cut, suggesting that we're going to get more, should, in his mind, work against Trump. I don't think it's going to, though. I think it's all backfiring.
Well, I mean, it has in the long-term rates, but how many people recognize that?
Well, I think that's the problem. I don't think a lot of people recognize that. I think people in our industry recognize it, but I don't think Joe Q Public necessarily recognizes it, right? Because it's not on the top of their radar.
Well, I talk about this too much, but the formula is the interest rates ought to be a regular rate for using somebody else's money, plus the degradation you're going to see in the currency over the term of the loan, right? This is not rocket science. Well, if these guys are going to start going back to inflating the place, which has been the tried and true mechanism for 20 years now, just get the asset prices up and hell with everybody else, they're going right back to it. Okay, so But the thing I think that helps them out now, Kenny, is a real lot of regular people have 401ks and IRAs and stuff, and maybe even stock from their parents. So they have, even though they're blue collar middle class, they worry more about their stock increasing going up than they are getting a raise.
Yeah,
a lot of people. And Kenny, I talk to clients all the time, and you know what's the phenomenon I've never seen before is, a lot of times people didn't want to, I'm not saying you should constantly protect everything you do, but there are times when the prices are high enough, when your life changes, to somehow tweak the risk-reward in your portfolio is something I think people should do, at least think about it a lot, every year or so.
Every year at the latest, right, they should do it. they should look at it every quarter. They don't need to do anything, but they should just kind of stay on top of it. But I think every year you have to. There's always rebalancing that has to be done at the end of the year. Could be every 6 months, but people need to stay, whether it's them or whether it's their advisor that stays on top of the portfolio to just watch how it gets out of balance and what they need to bring it back into balance.
But I think, you know, the phenomenon I've never seen before, and I really, be honest with you, don't know how to address it, is if you're talking to a potential client, people find me, I don't go find them.
Right.
And somebody might want to have retired at, say, $1.5 million or something.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they've, you know, maybe some people had their stuff in the wrong stocks and, you know, not doing so hot, but a real lot of people have them in the right stocks. A lot of people are in Apple and all kinds of things. And all of a sudden they, instead of $1.5 million they think they need, they have $2.5 million.
Right.
And if I say something, well, boy, you know, maybe we should do something where if the whole world goes to hell, your $2.5 million is at least 2.3 or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to cost a little bit, but, you know, let me give you the numbers and maybe something you want to do, at least for half of it or something. What do you mean? Yeah. If it goes down to $2 million, I don't care. It'll just come right back up. I've never had that response ever in my years in the business. So what if it goes down 20%? I'm still way ahead. I don't care. I mean, the difference in mentality between you and me being traders I got $100,000 in my account. I may have started with 20 5 years ago. But this morning I have 100, and tomorrow I have 90. I just lost 10. That's not the way they think of it at all. What are you talking about? I started with 20. I'm still up. I'm in the business. I'm happy.
Right.
You and I can't even fathom that mentality. Maybe it's because I was in a trading. It's like saying, you know, you don't want to use a gambling analogy, but if you and I are playing blackjack and we're up $500, and we lose 100 and say it wasn't really mine. Yeah, it was. Yeah, well, if you could get your chips and pick up and walk away without the security coming down on you, it's yours, not theirs.
Yeah, I mean, correct.
It's almost people almost feel like they owe some of it back to the market or something. I sit there and I try and be nice, Kenny, but I have real trouble with the conversation. I'm like, what do you mean you don't care if you lose $500,000? That's like a lot of dough. I mean, what you know how hard it is to make it? Maybe it wasn't hard to make it. You just sat there and watched your statements every month. Something has changed, and people don't even seem to, not everybody, but some people don't even seem to care. Okay, have you ever run into that other than now?
Yeah, all the time. You know what I mean?
But do you shake your head like I do?
Yeah, I yes, I do, and I'm shaking my head this morning again as I see what happened to the market yesterday. I shake my morning again, looking at, you know, what some of these stocks and sectors are doing, and I just am a little, you know, I remain. While I love the fact that market's going up, I remain a little bit suspect that after the election, I think you're going to, since they put it off, right? It didn't happen in October like I thought, but since they put it off, I think after the election is when we might have a little bit of a pullback. And that's okay, because it should pull back. It should shake the branches a little bit. But yeah, I keep scratching my head the same way you do.
Okay, we run over a second, but can you give me your assessment of bank earnings? I was just telling Joel, I never could figure out whether these guys are doing good or bad, or whether they're going to show it or not show it, or just pay each other bonuses, or how can you tell if these banks are doing good or bad?
Well, Goldman Sachs came out and smashed the number this morning. A lot of it on M&A activity, apparently. I just saw the headline. I didn't read the story yet. I think the banks are doing. Look, they're down from year-over-year comparisons are lower, but they're beating the estimates that we've set for ourselves, right? And you have to listen to the commentary. Jamie Dimon came out and made some mixed commentary, right? He's worried about geopolitical issues, but over here, he thinks that the U.S. economy is okay and that it's strong and that we're not going into this deep, dark recession and the labor market's robust enough to carry us through. So I think you have to start listening to what the C-suite of all these companies are really saying about the future to get a sense of how we're really doing. I'm okay with where we are. I'm nervous when I hear both sides talk about how they're going to spend money like drunken sailors, and you know we're all expected to pay for it. There was actually a great interview this morning on the CFO of Johnson & Johnson came out. They asked him about higher corporate tax rates, and he said, listen, I think with tax rates at 21%, we've taken a lot of that extra money and reinvested it and created jobs and all that. If they want to take more money away from us, those jobs are going to go away.
You know what? Anytime somebody says there, though, I say BS.
Well,
you and I feel the same way.
Well, right, but you should listen to, you know, he went on to then detail exactly what they've done. how they've hired and how they've spent the money. So it is if it's true what he says, and I have to believe it is because he said it, that you know, you have to kind of weigh that, right?
So, well, I mean, if they cut your and my tax rates down to zero, I guarantee you the people at Sirius Cafe are going to be happier when you come to town. We're gonna have one more drink because we got more dough.
Absolutely.
I mean, these guys like to single themselves out. I mean, who's I don't know if he's your buddy, Bill Ackman. Was on one day and he goes,
Bill Ackman, I can't really say he's my buddy.
I know. But he was on one day and goes, I don't think I should pay any taxes because I do all these good things and I should be able to do with my money as what I want. I mean, well, that's pretty interesting, but it's not the way. You don't get to not pay your piece of the aircraft carrier because you think you can do better with it.
No, 100%, 100%. But you have to ask yourself, what's the right rate for that aircraft carrier? Is it 20%? Is it 21%? Is it 30%? You know, I mean, you have to figure out where that puts us compared to where the rest of the developed world is. Money will go to where it's welcome. That's the bottom line. Right?
I would, if it was me, Kenny, and I don't know if you'd be on board with this, I would raise the corporate tax rate up to the same thing it is for individuals, because the Supreme Court says they're individuals, right? But here's what I would do. I would say that any dividends are tax deductible.
Okay, that could be fair. I'd have to look at that. But on the right, as I hear it, as you say it to me, it's an interesting proposition. So we should look at it. I should look at it because I don't know what that really means. You know,
well, you shouldn't pay twice, right?
Right. You definitely shouldn't pay twice.
I mean, and that's been the bane of corporate. That's why the Buffetts of the world and why Microsoft keeps all this cash, because they keep keeping it, making themselves these masters of the world under the guise that it's because of the tax rate they keep it because they don't want people paying twice.
Yeah.
I want to strip that away from them. If you have Johnson & Johnson has a project that is worth keeping the money, they should do it. They should just keep it because they want to be bigger.
Well, 100%. But he said, like this guy said today, that they in fact reinvest that money. They created jobs. They spent on research and development. That, like he said, they did it. But listen, let's be fair. He also said that they generated a ton of free cash flow as well, right?
And I think a lot of what these big companies, big drug companies, do, Kenny, is all they do is look around for people that are actually innovating and they just buy them, which I have a real problem with.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would have it. I'd like to see people get more dividends.
I would love to see people get more dividends. Listen, you and I are at that point in our life where I'd love to see people get more dividends.
I mean, the idea that Warren Buffett can't pay out a buck a year? I mean, give me a break. Right. I mean, what's he got, $1 trillion?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway, Kenny, you sound good. I hope you're feeling good. I'll
talk to you next week.
All right. SP Futures up 75 cents. NASDAQ Futures down 1.25. What do you say we have a real quick break, Ricky, and then we'll get to hell.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Rolling up, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board on this dismal day. It actually finally is getting a little bit lighter outside. God's sake, it's 7 o'clock. SP Futures up $1.50. NASDAQ Futures up 75 cents. We were down when we came in. You got to buy the dip. Buy the dip. That's we got to get a song like that. Buy the dip or something like that. Or we are the dip or whatever it is. But we have the professor.
Yes, we do. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
How far away were you guys in Carolina from all the chaos?
From the hurricane?
Yeah.
Well, when the hurricane came through here, I was actually kind of shocked. We had the day off from school. We got a little bit of rain, and that's about it. So we were fortunate. The people up there in the mountains, though, holy smokes, man, you had mountain rivers. I don't know if you saw the footage, but it was nasty. Wow.
There's no
way to get to those people either other than helicopter. I mean, they're up in the mountains. The roads are washed out.
What's the time frame for putting one of those things Actually, on Monday, I think we're going to have a friend of mine for a long, long time with the Marist High School with me, civil engineer. He's retired down in Austin. He listens to the show. And he's going to come in, and we're going to talk about how you prioritize bridges and roads and stuff after something like that. When you get and how many variables? Actually, I was talking to him about it. I say you need a guy like Hal, because you imagine if you start looking at what the most. I mean, if you've got 30 causeways out, you got 15 roads out, you got this out in the mountains, you got okay. Now do you prioritize a road that's easy to fix that goes to one house, or do you wait for the road that's harder to fix to go to five houses? I mean, I can't even imagine that sort of a choreography. Now you'd use a spreadsheet. Back in the old days, you'd be eyeballing the stuff, and plus, well, that bridge is out, but that bridge is steel. The lead time on steel is a year and a half. Well, we can't do that one right away, but now this other one is concrete. As soon as we get the concrete plant working, we can do some work on this place. Now, how many variables do you think are there, Al? We need you at your best math going and your biggest spreadsheet you ever had.
Well, I think every time I drive to Greensboro to work, I look up this billboard over the interstate, and it says Interstate 26 and 40 are out to Tennessee. So I think the biggest thing you have to do is get those two interstates back up and running, because if you can't haul groceries and gasoline into those towns, I think that's the biggest problem.
I'll ask the question. What was the old road before the interstate? Did the interstate become the new road? I mean, the old road become the interstate, or
in other words, it's probably some U.S. highway.
I mean, if Interstate 70 was
the main street through, I suspect it's probably the main street through Asheville.
Okay, because I mean, here if in Illinois, if 80 was out and 30 and 6 were still viable, then you could get from place to place. But in some areas, there was only one spot, and the old road became the interstate. So if that's out, you're just screwed.
Yeah, typically in mountain communities like Idaho, if they're going to build a interstate from, say, Boise to Lewiston, Idaho, which I know well because I've probably driven on it thousands of times, they'd probably use the same footprint that 95, right? U.S. 95, they'd probably use that same footprint.
Yeah. I think they did that in Illinois. A lot of the ways for 66 became 55.
Yeah, so you'd have to probably... They probably just put the interstate over an existing highway. I mean, like in Utah, for example, 89 is basically the main street that goes from, I think, Montana down into Nevada through Utah.
Yep.
And Interstate 15 is just parallel to it. At one point, they become one. When you get to Thanksgiving Point, Utah, where Adobe and Visa are located now, they're one, right? But north of Draper, Utah, they kind of separate a little bit. So that's probably what's going on in these mountain communities.
Well, I didn't realize the interstates were washed out.
Yeah, Interstate 40 and 26 are gone. Yeah.
We're talking about a block gone or miles gone?
I think it's just erased. Whereas up in the mountains, it's just erased.
So they got to go back to chipping and cutting and blowing and exploding to form a new base for it.
What?
Well, I think the people that live up in the mountains that are isolated right now, I suspect they probably have like four-wheelers. Every one of my family that spends any time in the mountains has at least two four-wheelers. So they'll probably be able to transit, but they can't transit if they have no gasoline. So that's why I think you got to get 40 and 26 back up and running.
Well, one of the ladies who listens to us from Ohio said that her cousin or somebody's in North Carolina, and the house is fine, but the road to the house is not.
Yeah, it's just erased. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
crazy stuff.
You got all that rain pouring down the mountain. It's gonna wipe some stuff out.
Yeah, it's Carl was saying that all the bridges held. I mean, the dams all held from the TVA.
Oh wow! Yeah.
So that was
Well, hey, chalk it up to our grandparents, right? They built the Hoover Dam, and that thing probably would stand a freaking asteroid attack, right?
Actually, I was reading this, where the stuff I read, I think you and Hal might be the only two people that read goofier stuff than me. I was reading stuff about what would, if all of a sudden everybody got killed and somebody showed up here a million years from now, what are, like, there's like seven things that that they would get here and they'd find out the humans were actually here. Not very many.
Yeah, I don't think so, yeah.
It was interesting that one of them was the stuff we put on the moon. That somebody put that there.
You know, yeah, because there's no erosion up there. There'd still be
a couple of satellites in orbit, yeah, if you're up high enough. But one of them was Hoover Dam. Even though it would no longer be a dam because it would be wrecked, no way that much of concrete could be in one spot unless somebody put it there.
Yeah.
But even like the Statue of Liberty would eventually fall into the harbor and it would rust through in, you know, 100,000 years or whatever. Everything else would. But, you know, they were talking about Hoover Dam actually would be a dam for like hundreds of thousands of years, except for the dam above it. What's the one above it? The Lake Powell and that.
Whatever, Lake Powell's the reservoir behind it.
Right? Well, yeah, whatever the dam above Hoover Dam is. Evidently, that one was made with reinforced concrete where the steel is part of the structure.
Mm.
They said eventually water would work its way into the and wreck that steel, where there's no steel in Hoover Dam. It's all concrete. And they said that thing would eventually break. And, of course, now there's not much water, a lot of them. They said if it broke, Hoover Dam was not designed to handle a flood of that magnitude. That it would damage Hoover Dam if that dam broke.
Yeah.
So it would be kind of a cascading effect. But still, most of the Hoover Dam would be intact, and somebody would say, gee, this concrete didn't get here by itself.
You know, but, you know, the age of the pyramids, some people question what is the, I guess, science of today. They could have been around a lot longer. And just imagine the communities and the buildings that were around the pyramids. And some people have hypothesized that these pyramids were covered in like some kind of limestone or some kind of beautiful stone that made it look really nice. And they're still hanging around. So,
well, you've got so much massive stone in one spot.
Yeah,
but I mean, in another million years, they would weather away. You'd probably have something there, but but you know, it's just kind of crazy stuff. I on the way in this morning, murky day here, but I was gonna ask Hal, how come when you see what the Federal Reserve has done in terms of price levels and so forth, you know, and I have this conversation, but I just was at dinner at my brother's, and my nephew's got these two gorgeous little girls, both of them are trips, right? I'm thinking, what's college going to be like when this young one gets there? Is it going to be $500,000 a year? I mean, what are we talking? I mean, if we continue to do this 8% inflation a year and don't tell anybody about it, why isn't academia? I mean, in the 70s, as time wore by, you had all kinds of press. When people like the Milton Friedman of the world, he wasn't the only one. You had all kinds of criticism of government and what they were doing, and now they're inflating things, and people were hurting. You don't see any of that now. It seems like the people that own the assets that are benefiting from this, or maybe in those days nobody owned stock. Of course, stocks went down. Actually, when the little known fact, if you weren't around then, the inflation did not hurt the average wage earner in the, to the extent if you had any money in the bank, your interest more than matched the inflation.
Yeah.
Where now if you had money in the bank, you're buried. If you just had $1 million in the bank that you saved up and didn't want the market, didn't do anything, and just put it in the bank 10 years ago, what's it worth? $500,000?
Yeah.
Maybe $550,000? I mean, you just got excoriated. We're back in the 70s, that didn't happen. Now the market was trading 800 because the interest rates were so high. This time, the market escaped totally, and the people who have money in the bank are the ones that are getting clobbered.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a totally different phenomenon, and I'm curious politically how they managed to pull it off, Al. I mean, it's totally different this time.
Well, I think the big thing is what happened in 2008 with interest on reserves. I mean, basically, it's like the minimum wage where it acts as a dam, and it keeps all those newly printed dollars, you know, in the banking system. And, you know, of course, those things leak out. And as they leak out, who they leak out to? Well, people who buy financial assets. And financial assets could be anything from NFL football properties to Monets to stocks, right? So I think the move in the market in the last, I mean, the explosion in the markets over the last 20, 30 years, I think a lot of it has to do with all that money that the Fed creates, the paper over the deficits that these politicians are creating. And that leaks out to these investors. And that's, and I think that's the reason why you see, I think that's the reason why the Fed stopped publishing this series that looks at the cash and the checking accounts of the top 1%. It went from, if you look at that one series, right before the pandemic hit, I think the average person in the top 1% had about $7,000 in cash and checking accounts balances. By August 2022, or 2022, when they stopped doing the updating the series, it was up to $400,000. So I just think that post-financial crisis, all that monetary policy just benefit the people at the top, just, and that's why the people that read the copy in the news and a lot of these professors at these Ivy League colleges and, you know, people in Hollywood and all these really wealthy people are like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Things are great. Things have never been better. And I think it's the Fed. The Fed is the driver of this wealth gap.
Well, there was an article yesterday on CNBC, and I don't have it in front of me, how Musk, because of the stock prices and so forth, although he's taken a hit last week, he could be a trillionaire all just on stock appreciation.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that money is still locked up, right? He can't just cash it out.
Well,
so.
whenever he does, they give him more.
Yeah.
But I guess there needs to be there probably are, you know, every once in a while, one of the listeners will send me an inflation type of study. Greg sent me the last one, Greg Pappas, not that long ago, where he has, you know, just picked out 10 things from 5 to 10 years ago, you know, things that are important to people, like cars and houses and stuff, and what the inflation has been in those things over the 10 years versus the CPI. But you know what I'd love to do, Hal, and I don't, you know, you guys, I don't know if you've got a bunch of guys you can give this assignment to, but I would like to see something in a sense that, you know, pick what the mean income is for somebody. I think it's, well, the mean family is up to what, 78 or 79, 80 or something like that. But the mean individual, I think, is still around 39,000, right? The median income. And so let's say $20 an hour, okay, which is 40 grand a year, right?
Yeah.
Remember that from my Pullman days. So say at $20 an hour, what I'd like to see is how many hours, pick 25 things, I'll make it 100 things, pick 25 things and just go down the line. Lunch and a hamburger and a beer or a Coke for lunch, because nobody has a beer at lunch anymore. Hamburger and a Coke for lunch. Is it now one full hour versus 20 years ago, was that a half hour?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, because I did this thing and where people were complaining during COVID and, like, you know, and even now, I guess, you know, why people don't get off their dead ass and go to work, right? They're home playing computer games or whatever they're doing. And the I think I did a thing where if somebody, and this is, again, before COVID, so the prices are different. If you if Grandpa Hal gave Hal, who's sitting on the sofa, $5,000 to go out and buy a car that at least runs, of course, now I don't know if you can get that for $5,000. If he gave you the dough and he paid for the insurance for you and the gas, how long it would take? And so now the tax on that is going to be $350, $400, right? The title fee is like $160. The state registration is another $150. Then there's a city, and then there's if you want to park in front of your house. I think I got up to the point where it was 67 hours of work just to the taxes and registrations on the car.
Yeah.
So you're talking about your first week and a half you're given to Illinois and Chicago. I think if we would go back and use the CPI for that, I mean, we're talking about in Chicago, last time I looked, is one of the major hospitals, one night's stay is like $11,000. So what are we talking? What's 20 goes into $11,000 is like a real lot. What's that, 500 hours for one night in a hospital?
Yeah.
As opposed to 20 years ago, it couldn't have been anywhere close to that. And what is a $60,000 car for somebody making $20 an hour? And isn't that like almost the median price of cars now?
Well, yeah, the payment on that alone, and yeah, then on top of that, the insurance, and now these cars are communicating with the insurance companies and telling them anytime you get within, get too close to the car in front of you, they're sending that information, and they're probably raising your insurance in real time, right?
Now, why should I have to pay for that?
Yeah.
Why can't I just go buy a regular pickup truck?
Yeah.
I mean, some of it is government mandated, whatever. But why do I want all that? I don't want 15 alignment sensors. I could look at my tires. I don't need that thing to tell me when I'm 1 pound short.
I had a 68 Ford pickup truck, a 4x4, and you know how I did the alignment? I got out a tape measure.
God. Well, alignments are always good because you lose too much money on your tires if you're not aligned.
Oh yeah, but on that old 4x4 Ford pickup truck, I mean, it had a solid front axle.
Yeah.
And
you had a 250 then.
Yeah, all you had to do is get out a 9/16 wrench, I think it was, and loosen up this lock bolt and twist it, and then make sure that it was towed in just a little bit, and you're set.
Well, you had a 250 because the 150s had the double axle they had a problem with for years.
Mm.
They had the one with the...
That thing probably weighed about 7,000 pounds.
Well, they were huge. Yeah, they had a solid front axle. And now the 150s didn't. 150s were like the Bronco, and that had its own set of problems. But
yeah,
they all. But I had a solid front axle. I had a Dodge Ram Charger. God, did that thing! It's the short wheelbase.
Yeah.
Remember my nephew? I take him for a ride. We're just going down the street in Beverly, where I was living. Uncle Tom, this street sure is a hell of a lot bumpier for this Ram Charger. He says. That thing, God, you could lose a filling in that thing. But it was built pretty stout, but still, it was,
yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want any. I picked up some girl on a date in that thing, and she goes, Where'd you get this thing? Anyway, I liked it.
Fortunately, my wife is okay with us owning older vehicles that I can still fix. We have a 2012 Dodge van that I can fix, and we have a 2008 Chevrolet, and both run great. They both have about 100,000 miles on them, and I can still work on them. I can still fix them.
Well, yeah, good.
These new cars, you can't do that. If you have an alternator that goes out, you got to pull the engine, you know.
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, one of the guys here in the building has had an alternator out, and it was like a 600-hour job. And
yeah,
I had a 65 Olds. If the alternator went out, you unhooked the belt. There was two bolts. You took it to there was a place a mile away that was alternator and starter repair. They would redo them, hand them yours. He'd hand you a new one. You go back to put the couple bolts in, and away you went.
Yeah, when I was in 18, or 17, my stepfather said, "Yeah, I'll help you buy a car. You save up the money, you pay for the extra insurance cost that I'm going to incur, and then you pay for your insurance, you pay for your driver's license, you pay all the gas, and by the way, if it breaks, you got to fix it." So I got one of those manuals that Checker Auto Parts. At the time, it was Shucks Auto Supply. I got one of those repair manuals for my car that I purchased, and when I didn't know how to fix it, I'd drive it over to my mechanic, get a free estimate. The mechanic shop was actually called my mechanic. I'd go get a free estimate, and then I'd go find the part at the junkyard. Or I learned that Shucks had a lifetime warranty, so anytime something bad went on with my car, they'd give me a free estimate. I go to Shucks, and they would give me a part, and I put it on. And after about a year and a half, I had a car that I purchased for nothing. My brother Ryan gave it to me. I put a new motor in it, and every part on it, except for the motor, was warrantied for life.
God.
As long as I owned it, man. It was great. I think I put about $1,000 into the car.
Well, you know, I don't we need some stuff that tells us, of course, your professor buddy, Professor Goodhart, that says once you have an economic index or whatever it is that people target, it ceases to be its value as an index.
And yeah, I think the CPI is that. Yeah.
CPI has gotten there. And
it's
but
like
I mean,
that,
what, in terms of you you walk around, you see the market going up every day. You see my clients doing spectacularly well, which is great. And because we're not even trying to sell calls for a lot of people. We're just keeping the puts. You know, when the thing goes up $20, we roll the puts up 10 or something. We're just trying, you know, keeping the in case anything
yeah,
bad. Yeah, we're just trying to keep anything bad happens. You know, we're keeping the protection there. But I'm not near as crazed as I used to be. Where, you know, if the stock goes up $10, we roll the puts up 5. I mean, it's. But I mean, there's going to come a time here, maybe after the election, we're going to tighten everything up. But right now, it sure seems like money's going in, and everybody's sort of happy. And boy, you know, and you run into people that are absolutely convinced Trump's a shoo-in, and then you run into somebody else, and they think Harris is kicking his ass everywhere. I mean, I honestly don't know what to think. People ask me who's going to win. The only thing I can say a little bit, Al, is I've done some reading about the trading, the demographics. And whenever these polls come out, they talk about people who are likely to vote that have voted. And I saw how bad that worked in Britain with the Brexit, where they were way off because they didn't get to the people who are actually going to vote. And one thing I sort of noticed with this election is a lot of the Trump supporters, not a lot, but some from the last 8 years ago, are gone. You know, and there's this undercurrent. I mean, I'm going to say a lot of it. I don't know. I for some reason, I bump into a lot of more young ladies than I do guys, or maybe they just talk to you more. An incredible amount of young ladies between the ages of 18 and 30 just think the man is a sniveling creep and would never vote for him. So, and I don't think any one of those girls has been polled. They've never voted before. I don't know how big that is, but it's something I sort of noticed that, you know, you'd be sitting someplace and he comes on the TV and three young girls that are talking to each other go, man, look at that creep. I mean, I don't think any poll of 1,000 people countrywide is reaching them. So I don't, but there might be people on the other side that never are so fed up with this, the new Democratic Party, which I am too, that there might be a lot of people feel the same way about Harris. They see the guy in New York getting indicted. They see the guy here in Chicago who's totally incompetent, and they look at Biden, you know, and whatever, and they say, well, we don't want this either. So
you look at the VP debate. I mean, I wasn't a fan of J.D. Vance before that VP debate, but boy, the way he just was very respectful and kind and courteous, and the way he handled the answers and the fact checking from the moderators who said they weren't going to fact check, and
well, but the kindness everybody gets the fact check.
Yeah, I know, but the kindness he shared that he exchanged with Tim Walz. I mean, Tim Walz looked like he was completely unprepared, and I thought Vance probably performed better than anybody I've seen, maybe since maybe a Bill Clinton or something. I mean, he really did well. And gay men on Twitter, they're sharing the fact that they're going to vote for the guy. I mean, he did really well in that debate. I mean, he looked really sharp. He was on top of it. And Tim Walz did not look like he was prepared. And I think the problem with it,
this is not what's turned into one. Yeah. This is not a popularity contest.
Yeah. I saw the VP debate and I thought, man, I wish those were our two choices.
Well, no, I did too. I didn't watch much of it
I watched the whole thing. Yeah. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. I actually thought they both came across pretty well. I mean, they're just different.
Yeah.
One guy's a little bit more of a folksy dude that some people don't go for that. But I mean, I don't think Tim Walz is an idiot at all. I think he's real smart. I don't know.
Well, you know, the problem I have with Tim Walz is during the pandemic, apparently the Minnesota National Guard is going through people's neighborhoods and forcing them back in their houses. Meanwhile, him and his wife are celebrating the burning down of Minnesota, Minneapolis. So I'm not a big fan of Tim Walz at all. And
I mean, I don't know that much about him. Plus, the VP doesn't really do much unless the other guy gets old and
Well, late. Hey, the VP's doing a lot this year. I mean,
yeah,
they took out the guy that got the 15 million votes and gave it to the VP who got zero votes.
I think the Republicans in general have a stronger bench than the Democrats.
Yeah, I think so. I think the problem with the Democrats is they've really attached themselves to some crazy ideas.
Yeah, and there's nobody that's allowed to work its way up if they don't fit the mold, whatever the mold is.
And I think the problem with the Democrats is the ones that they push are the ones that are from places where it's a one-party state. And in those one-party states, they're not baptized in fire. They get softball questions from friendly media. And I think that's the problem with Kamala Harris. I mean, look at her 60 Minutes interview. They cut and pasted her words from earlier sections of the interview and placed it in a place where she had this really horrible word salad, right? So, I mean, think about that. 60 Minutes is, I think they're trying to help her, but they're really harming her. Because if you never face the fire, if you're always building softball questions from friendly media and you're never really put yourself in the fire.
Yeah, but
that's why you don't do well.
I'm not disagreeing, Hal, but what is, I mean, it's this whole idea that this, you've become, put it this way, in my opinion, one of the problems we have is the skill set to get the job doesn't match up necessarily at all with the skill set you want in the job.
Yeah.
That's a problem. I really don't, I mean, I would hope that he or she would be better. I mean, because I have a girlfriend who, you know, is all over the Republican side, I've listened to the Trump talk at some of these rallies. If that was my uncle, I wouldn't invite him over. I mean,
yeah.
He's talking about stuff that from years ago. I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, I think what people, I'm not a Trump supporter. I mean, I saw what he done during the pandemic. I mean, he handed the reins over to Dr. Fauci, right? So I'm not a fan of Trump by no means, right? But I have brothers and I have friends in Idaho and Oregon and Utah. And it's not that they worship this guy. What they like about him is the fact that, one, you know, the state is coming after him. The state does not like him. Why should they? Well, I know, but that's what they like about him. That's what libertarians like about him.
I know, but I sympathize.
But he also speaks his mind, and they love that.
I really do understand all that, and a lot of it I agree with it. Okay, mm-hmm. I really do. But the reward can't be the most powerful man in the world.
Okay. Well, I think what they also like about him, and I think this is what Robert F. Kennedy likes about him. One, he says he states his mind. He doesn't show up at a Minnesota pheasant hunt not knowing how to load a gun, and then he uses a semi-automatic shotgun instead of a double barrel shotgun. When you go pheasant hunting, you use a double barrel shotgun. One is safer, right? He's used one of those ones that Sarah Connor used in the Terminator movies, right? So this guy pretends to be something he's not, right?
But I mean, we're talking about,
and that's why the people who love Trump, who like him, they don't like everything he says, they don't like what he tweets, but they like the fact that he shows up in his blue suit and his red tie, and he sounds the same no matter where he's at. He doesn't change his accent, right? That's what they like him.
In my opinion, the idea of Trump, somebody from the outside who's not afraid to tell everybody where to get off,
to me is
absolutely something I've dreamed of in politics.
Yeah.
But you can't, because that's what you want, you can't attribute it to somebody who doesn't deserve that.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is just because, you know,
I'm just saying why they like him, right? That's why they like him.
I understand that, but
if Clinton, Tom, if Clinton had said, yeah, I smoked marijuana, I was freaking 18 years old in the 60s. But what does he do? He says, well, I didn't inhale.
You're not going to get me to be a fan of that guy.
Yeah.
My point
is, what these politicians do. That
well, sure they do.
Their accent changes from town to town. And, you know, John Kerry puts on this, you know, hunting gear in Ohio, right? It's obvious, obvious pandering.
The only issue I honestly have with
and Trump, Bush was the same way. Bush was the same way.
But I get all that. And the issue with the man is, I mean, I had nothing really.
Oh, his economic policies are horrible. I don't agree with any of his economic policies.
I'm saying at some point on a personal level, you need, I mean, I think I do, and this is, like, sure as hell I'm not going to judge everybody else by me. You have to have something that even though, I mean, Hillary came from Chicago, or from where the hell, Lake Forest or someplace. Seemed to do well in school here, did well in school there. Doesn't seem like, you know, kind of a horrible person. All of a sudden, she gets involved in this stuff, and she gets to the point where she's got trades put in her account by some futures firm in Arkansas to essentially give Bill money.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, I don't care if the lady's running for school board. That's my line. I'm not voting for her for anything.
Yeah.
You know, and now we've reached the point with Trump, and I've been one of the biggest, talkers about nobody in this country, even him, should have a $40 million legal bill with the government. That's way overstepping. I mean, I'm with all that people are after him, but he also treats people like crap, so people are going to go after him, right? But
let me
finish for a quick second, but the man is a total grifter and a con man. I heard people, I used to hang out at the Buckingham Club, and a lot of people from New York would come to Chicago, and they'd come and drink when they were up in the hotel. I heard story after story of this guy 20 years ago about friends of theirs that did stuff for him. He didn't pay him, sued him. The guys were out of business because he didn't pay him, and they did a big job for him. There's nothing good about the guy. His mom hates him. You know, I mean, so you can't just overshadow all that and say because he hates the people I hate, all this other stuff doesn't matter. It matters to me.
Well, Tom, I've heard things where, you know, he's been the opposite. I mean,
where?
Kamala Harris prosecuted Michael Jackson. Trump allowed Michael Jackson to stay in in Trump Tower in New York City. He flew Nelson Mandela around the country after he got released from prison or something like that. So there's things that he does.
Okay, but I'm saying you can't be the point where, because that's kind of what I want, I'm going to forget all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know,
I will say this. I mean, I don't like the guy's economic policies for the most part. And there's a lot of things I don't like about him. But he's not as evil as the left makes him out. And he's not as godlike as the right makes him out. The truth is somewhere in between, right? He's a caricature. The media that is really unfriendly to conservatives and libertarians have made this guy out to be some monster that he's not. Now, the right has done the opposite.
I agree with that. Now, is the reward for being minorly persecuted? But, you know, hell, I'm going to say this. If you and I got that job, and the first day you started telling all the newspaper people what bleeps they all were and how incompetent they were and how you hated them all, do you think you're going to get a lot of good stories?
Oh, no, not at all. No.
Well, I mean, but that's what he did.
But he wants that. That's what his people like.
Okay, I get that. But at some point, you are what you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want somebody in the job that has... I can't trust him business-wise versus what he's doing in the office. It's the same way I couldn't trust Cheney. Because
here's the ironic thing. The left, who thought Dick Cheney was the Satan, who thought Cheney was Darth Vader, now they're like celebrating the fact that he's endorsing Kamala Harris, and it's not because Kamala Harris.
I think that the message here for the people on the right, and again, I am no Harris fan. The message for people on the right is when you start having people that are closest to the guy flee him and can't stand him. Guys that really jumped on his bandwagon, you know, Scaramucci.
Well, I think a lot of those guys were the ones that were fired.
I'm saying, hell, you're sort of doing the same thing. All these 50 other guys are wrong, and he's right. Someplace you got to go, wait a minute, they must have a point.
Well, let's just ask this question. What group of people who have served the highest levels of government, the head of the CIA, former heads of Department of Defense, Department of State, who are they supporting? Who are all these CIA operatives supporting? Who does
I have no idea. I've never talked to one.
They support the Democrats. They're the Democrats have become the party of war.
I'm not.
They're the party of the state.
Next week, let's talk about what I don't like about Harris. But every one of these discussions falls back on they're not as bad as the other person.
Oh, yeah, I know, exactly. I mean,
which to me is a big problem. I'm just saying, let's look at both of them the way they are and how the hell they got there. I honestly don't. I don't know which is worse. I honestly don't. Yeah. The continuation.
Well, let's look at the endorsements that Trump and Kamala are touting. Trump is touting Elon Musk, a fighter of free speech, a proponent of free speech. He's got Robert F. Kennedy Jr., right? I mean, if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to head Department of Health and Human Services, I might have to vote for the guy.
Why?
Then he's got Tulsi Gabbard.
What has he ever run and done anything?
Well, I mean, if you look at what Robert Kennedy's been doing, he's been fighting for fighting against the cartel of the FDA and these large food companies that are pushing this horrible diet, which creates the chronic illnesses that we see today. So Robert Kennedy is fighting for kids, for their for healthier foods.
If Kamala Harris would have thrown him a bone, he'd be on the other side. He's as loyal as an alley dog.
Well, maybe, but also Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard at Department of Defense or Secretary of State.
I wouldn't put that guy any place.
I'm okay with that.
Why?
Kamala Harris has got
he's a TV guy.
But Kamala Harris is celebrating Dick Cheney endorsing her. She's probably going to put Liz Cheney in some cabinet post. The warmongers of warmongers.
I mean,
Tom, really comes down to me, because we have these really bad choices. We have two bad choices, in my opinion. We got somebody who's going to make America San Francisco, and we got somebody who's going to make America marginally healthier. Maybe marginally more peaceful.
He was there once. He didn't do anything. All he did was fight with people around him.
Well, I know, but hey, he hired a lot of deep state Republicans, and those are the ones he fired, and those are the ones that dislike him to this day. Can you imagine Elon Musk?
Hell, can you even? And I know you're amazingly accomplished in many fields.
But what I'm saying is, you got to make America San Francisco. I don't want that.
I don't either.
Right, and that's what you're going to get. You're going to get Dick Cheney, and you're going to get San Francisco if she wins. I'm sorry, that's who she is.
Like I said, I don't know which is worse.
They're both bad. That's why I liked the president.
There's a chance. You may not. For this discussion, you may have lost my vote. I'm down between you and Carl and Lou, because Russell doesn't want to vote. So I'm deciding.
Well, I don't want to vote either, but
I'm going to vote maybe for you.
Yeah.
I'm not voting for either one of these people. I normally would drop back to the Libertarian, but I don't like that guy either.
Yeah, the Libertarian candidate's bad too. The previous Libertarian candidate was very. I mean, the Libertarian candidates.
The one 8 years ago wasn't bad.
Who?
Who was the guy 8 years ago? He wasn't bad.
Yeah, but you know the problem with him is he thought a Libertarian was somebody that was socially liberal and fiscally conservative. That's not a Libertarian.
Actually, I vote for those guys because I'd like to have them one year get enough votes where they actually get on the debate stage.
Yeah.
Instead of this two-person fiasco we see with these other people.
Oh, the presidential debate, I couldn't even watch that.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible. And
it actually made me ill watching the presidential debate.
I mean, she's in my mind, you know, I can't even begin. She's never written a paycheck. Has she ever worked for anybody other than government? I have real issues with her. I could talk about her for the same amount of time. I just think that this idea that...
Well, she's never gotten a vote at the federal level, ever.
And
one vote.
Like I said, I love the idea of Trump. I just think as an individual, I don't know how I can just... It's kind of like if you really like somebody, and I'm not accusing him of this, but if you really like somebody and you find out that they had some bad situation with some young lady years ago, and he says one thing and she says the other, you might go, all right, well, I'm going to believe him and not her. She's just looking for money or something. Well, all of a sudden, if it's two people, if it gets to be 30 people, I mean, if one or two people that he fired said, you know, I don't like the guy, well, of course you don't like him. He got fired. Well, now all of a sudden, if it's five or someplace, somewhere, I'm going to sit there and go, maybe there's a common thread here someplace.
Well, I think all the Republicans that are lining up against him and lining up for her, they know they're not going to get a job in the next Trump administration, right? So I think what they're doing is they're hoping that they're the one or two token Republicans that get into the next.
Hell, they just they just could be right. The man can't get.
I mean, they could. Yeah, they could. Well, they probably are, right?
But the whole idea comes down to who's
your endorsers? I mean, I would take, honestly, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, Elon Musk. I would take those three over.
I mean, Elon Musk, here's a game. Now, here's a story. Now, here's a guy that I you maybe know this better than me, so I'm wrong. You tell me. Here's a guy that is in business because of carbon credits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because getting money from other people.
Now, and the subsidies made him, you know, probably helped him become a billionaire.
I think it kept him in business.
Yeah.
So I think that was an Obama era bill and program. Yeah. How do you only these industrial people in the South Side? I may not like Harris, but if one side gave me, what is it, $3-4 billion, it's pretty hard for me to turn tail and be on the other side.
Well, think about this. Think about how bad the Democratic Party has become.
I don't care if they gave me $2 billion.
Yeah, to push a guy like Elon Musk away from them. That's how bad they are.
I don't know that. I think these guys are just they don't care about us. They're just like Harold Janine, of ITT. These governments, they're puppets. I'm the master of the universe now. That's what these.
Oh, I agree 100% that the people that get elected, they're probably not running the government, right? There's people pulling the strings behind the scenes, right?
Why doesn't somebody come out and say?
I think it's why the state, the federal bureaucracy hates Trump so much because he's a puppet.
Sure they do.
I don't think he's a puppet. I think he is his own man.
Here's my problem with him. He's not a puppet. That's what I love about the guy.
Exactly. He's
so totally ineffective.
Yeah.
And his inability to make a consensus of anybody makes him totally ineffective.
But Tom, that's the reason why he is ineffective, because the whole federal bureaucracy is lined up against him.
You have to be effective.
Yeah. But I think that's the problem. That's why he is ineffective, because the whole federal bureaucracy.
But the point is to be effective.
They're the ones that run the government.
If you go in, and I used to do this at board meetings, that's why people. If all of a sudden there was a vote on something and you were the only no vote, and you really thought you were right, it's up to you to say, "Hey guys, why don't we? Yeah. What are you doing tomorrow morning? Let's have a cup of coffee. Here's my position. Here's what I think I'm right. Here's maybe what you guys aren't seeing." And maybe you carry the day, and the next meeting you have four votes or three, but at least you try, and you do it in a way where people saying they don't say, "I'm not going to have breakfast with you," or "I'm not going to have a beer with you." There's a way. I mean, you catch more flies with honey.
I agree with that 100%.
I'm saying I think the man had his chance. I don't think he was very effective. I don't think he did anything on the healthcare system. Matter of fact, he tore off everything that he was going to do off his the night he won. He took it off his website. All the
well, I mean, every politician is going to promise you this and promise you that, right? I mean, he was attacking the Federal Reserve
for
keeping interest rates too low for too long.
The man could go out tomorrow with some of the people that love him. I know I'm close to some of them. He could shoot a baby in the street, and people would say it was the baby's fault. I just can't understand that kind of adulation for somebody. I don't think deserves it. I mean, he's got more adulation than Eisenhower, for God's sake. And Eisenhower, look at the difference.
Yeah, Tom, I don't think he's going to go out and shoot a baby for one.
I don't think he is either. But I'm saying it's the point where no matter what he does, it's okay.
Well, I don't think that's the case with my brothers and my cousins.
Tell you what, it is with a lot of people I know. It really is.
I think what they like about him is they know the state is aligned against him.
And they ignore everything else. That's my problem.
And I don't think they love the man personally. I think they love the fact that he stands up to this federal bureaucracy, which, thanks to Teddy Roosevelt and the civil service legislation in the 1800s, you know, presidents used to be able to wipe out, you know, wholesale fire the previous administration's hires. And, you know, Republicans would get elected and they'd fire all the Democrats in the federal bureaucracy and the Republicans, and they'd hire a bunch of Republicans.
But that's what you have to do. You have to look at the system, and you have to say, okay, we have consumer credit group, Elizabeth Warren's people, or the consumer protection group. There's 15,000 people or so that I don't think, now individually, Are they useless? No. But I think the whole thing is a duplicative effort.
Yeah.
All right. So if I was president, I would say, okay, guys, let's go back to Congress. Let's rewrite something here to put what these people are doing back in the places that were supposed to do it anyway. The Federal Reserve, the Comptroller of the Currency, the people who are supposed to regulate banks. We don't need another whole department now because the other people refuse to do it. Now, we're going to give these people a chance to go to the other departments. We're going to do something. But the fact is, we don't need it. We all know that the bureaucracy is too much, but there's a way to deal with this. It's not a TV show. You're fired.
I don't think that's going to happen because if you look at the politics of the people who work in state government and federal government, you look at just the politics of the capital cities of the states and in the federal government. They're 80-20, 60-40. I mean, who works for government? Probably Democratic voters. There's no way Democratic congressmen.
That's all crap. In any red state, the people who are the bureaucrats are reds.
No, I lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, Tom, and downtown Salt Lake City. Downtown Salt Lake City is 60-40 Democrat. And who's going to work? Who's working at the state capitol in Salt Lake City, Utah? People that live in Salt Lake City, Utah. All right. So, I mean, Austin, Texas.
I have no idea where you're going with this.
Every state capitol, probably nearly all of them, are probably 60-40, 80-20 Democrat.
All right, you're saying in a small town in southern Illinois, which is 95% Republican, that the people working for city government are 80% Democrat. I don't know where you're coming up with that.
Well, what I'm saying is they're probably pro state. They're working for their job. They're pro state.
They're pro their job.
Yeah.
Like everybody is.
They're pro their employer.
Well, you're pro universities. You work for university.
And what I'm saying though is at the federal level, there's no way the Democrats are ever going to agree to shrink these federal bureaucracies.
You know who shrunk the federal bureaucracy more than any president ever? Bill Clinton. Without question, he shrunk it more than anybody else. He's a Democrat.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, he was...
He was what? He was a Democrat.
I know, but he was up against a very hostile Congress, you know, that was
but
run
he,
by
he,
public.
He let people... I don't know if he had a hiring freeze or what he did.
I think he was a very good president, right?
I didn't say that. What I said was, you say Democrats can't do it, and I just pointed there's a Democrat who did it.
Well, I think he had to.
Do you think
there were
less federal employees under Bush 1 or 2 than when they got in there?
I'm not saying Republicans are great. What I'm saying is the people that populate the federal bureaucracy that work at the Federal Reserve, I don't think they're libertarian conservatives. I just don't think that's the case.
The people that I have cocktails with the Federal Reserve when they used to come to work, there were probably 8 guys. Every single one of them was Republican. Every single one.
Well, that's not necessarily a good thing because
you say one thing, I'm telling you they weren't, and now you're saying,
come on. You really think D.C. is a hotbed of conservatism?
I didn't say that. But
you think they're a hotbed of libertarianism? I just don't think the Democrats are ever going to let that voting bloc get reassigned or shrunken. I just don't see it happening. And yet, I
just said to you, the only president that had less people when he got there was Clinton.
Well, but also he wasn't the only one governing. He was disciplined by the Senate and the House.
But it takes a consensus to say we have too many duplicative spots.
That's a great example of how two-party government can work well, right?
That's my point. And in
California and New York are examples of how one-party government
we have a lot of, and I'm not accusing you, we have a lot of dumbos in this country that think it's a TV show, that the man can show up and just say, you're fired, and everybody walks home. That's the way it works for anybody.
Yeah.
There.
Well, I mean, I don't think the other candidates much, I mean, what experience does she have?
They're all facing the same numbers. We're broke.
Yeah.
So one of them.
Exactly, and not one of them has been asked the question about the deficit.
All right. We have two people running for office, all right, in the last 8 years. It's right there in front of everybody's face. One guy came in and said, we're cutting all the taxes for the high-end people, and oh, by the way, this is going to be accretive to the budget, which it didn't. It wasn't. It was a total load of BS. Then the other guy comes in, which he was a part of, and said, we're going to spend all this money, and oh, by the way, everybody's going to do so well, it's going to be accretive to tax receipts. and it wasn't. So we have two lines of BS from two people that are running, neither one of which you can trust.
The question is for Americans, are you going to vote for somebody who's going to make America San Francisco? Or are you going to vote for somebody that might make America a little healthier?
Except he already had his chance.
More peaceful? And then you got to look at the
I'm still hoping there's a third party could come up in 30 days. I mean, I'll have a dream tonight.
It's not. The Democrats, Republican got this locked up in an oligarchy, right?
You look at the last 24 years, which Carl has got me doing. You look at the growth of government. You look at the growth of the deficits.
Yeah.
You look at all that stuff. You can't tell me when one person left and the other one went in.
You can't. Yeah.
So the idea that Republicans are
Republicans. I'm not a Republican. Yeah.
Republicans like to cut taxes. By the way, I like people cutting taxes. And they don't have the balls to cut programs to match up to it. And the Democrats like to give stuff to people, and they don't have the balls to raise the taxes to make up for it. So either one is the same way when you get to the numbers, isn't it?
Well, one thing that I've noticed from a distance, because I'm not in either party, one thing I've noticed is that the party that was the party of blue-collar workers, not the union heads, but the blue-collar workers, the party that was anti-war, the party that was anti-state, that was the Democratic Party. That's now become the Republican Party, and that's why all these neocons like Mitt Romney and all these warmongers in the Republican, the old Republican Party, hate Trump so much, because he's moved the Republican Party from the country clubs. Now you got these small business owners, and you got these blue collar workers. That's all shifting toward the Republicans, and the old guard, like Dick Cheney and Mitt Romney, they want the old Republican Party, you know, country clubs and war. But the party of war, it's just shocking. The party of war, the party of government cartels between big food conglomerates and big pharma, the corporatism really is the Democratic Party. The party of billionaires is really the Democratic Party.
I think what's happened.
The party of the state is the Democratic Party.
I think what's happened now is that.
And the party of free speech is now the Republican Party. The more interesting, funny people tend to be conservative libertarians.
The Democratic Party has lost me. There's no doubt about that.
It's amazing.
But we got a dash. But it's I think what you find is that when Obama got in, and Dr. J said it to me, he goes, that guy, he did more for rich people than anybody ever did.
Oh, yeah. When really the wealth gap really exploded.
Well, I think look at your Elon Musk as an example.
Yeah.
Wherever he thinks the money is or the power is, that's where he's going.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like.
Well, I think Elon Musk is honestly worried about free speech.
I don't think the guy worries about anything but himself, but that's just me.
But the state can take him down really fast. Right?
Well, I'm saying in Chicago, people say it's Democratic, it's this or that. Whoever is in power and is passing out the money, that's who I support. If you're three people are running for, if I had a big law firm, or if I was Merrill Lynch, Merrill Lynch not so much because they don't get that much business in the city. But if you're a big law firm, and three people are running for mayor, it's a bad year for you because you got to give them all money.
Yeah,
you have to be a supporter. Whoever hands out the government dole.
And that's the problem with our form of government, right? That's why I'm not a Republican. That's why I'm not a Democrat.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of Republicans that say this. I'm anxious to see if Trump loses, what happens. Does the Republican Party go back to being the Republican Party? Or if she loses, does the Democrats sit there and go, how did we get here? What kind of mess are we in?
I think the party is going to be the party of Byron Daniels, the Republican from Florida, and J.D. Vance. And, you know, the thing I don't like about J.D. Vance, he seems like a blue dog Democrat in the way he talks about trade and his populism. He seems like an old blue dog Democrat to me.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because if he wins,
and I'm not a fan of.
Well, next week let's talk about if he wins, he's an immediate lame duck.
Yeah.
And the it'll make 4 years from now, if we make it that far, very interesting, won't it?
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. S&P futures up 250. And as if he's up now, of course we'll be up today. We always are. The Fed makes sure that that's happening. So I'm gonna hopefully what I told my brother yesterday is our job is to stay as far as way we can on the protection, costing people as little as possible. Just let it go up every single day, and then the day it's going to turn, we recognize it's going to turn and get the puts real close so we make all the money back on the way down. How can we do that, Al?
I don't know.
That's why I have you on the show. You're supposed to tell me this is the day.
after visiting the Fed on Friday, where it was supposed to be this diversity conference and poverty discussions, there wasn't, I don't think there was one person on the panel who actually grew up poor. It seemed everybody there at the Fed was upper middle income.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Then they make a bunch of dough.
There was one person whose mom was on food stamps.
You know, there's all kinds of people at the Fed that make more money than the chairman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's scary.
So, I mean, if they want real diversity, have some guy that, you know, whose mom who worked three jobs and was divorced.
Diversity means you have one guy from the other boarding school down the block. That's diversity.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't want anybody from Idaho.
There was no diversity of thought.
Why don't you raise your hand and say, any up there from Idaho or from the south side of Chicago?
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. That's a
next time I go to that, I'm going to invite you and Carl and
oh, we would be tossed in a nanosecond. SP Futures up 3. Imagine if they put us at the in the audience for the
it'd be nice conference. If we were on the panel at least.
Oh,
I mean,
God, we would
provide a different perspective.
They'd have the gong show. They'd have the hook. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ Futures up 12. Good job, Ricky, with this Donnybrook today. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.